Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
If you're early in your career and looking for insight, inspiration, and honest advice, listen to the Capital Ideas Podcast. Hear from Capital Group professionals about leaning into the differences that make you unique, making decisions that last, and what it means to lead with purpose. The Capital Ideas Podcast from Capital Group, available wherever you listen. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
March has arrived and we're only a few weeks away from the NCAA tournament. Make sure to head over to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. That's right, it's $100,000 and starting on March 15th. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What is up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast, brought to you by BetOnline.ag and Untuck It. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius. When I say we, I mean me. I am drinking. We have just come off of a huge weekend for the Lakers, beating the Los Angeles Clippers and Milwaukee Bucks on Friday night. LeBron James has made a statement taking out Kawhi Leonard and Giannis. We are probably going to cuss a little bit in this episode, so be warned. We will not edit this very much, if at all, because we just want to capture it, as you can tell by the enormous excitement in my voice. This is right after the game. Lakers balled out. There's so much stuff to talk about. Darius, where do we start, man?
So let's start with the Clippers, since that's fresh on our minds.
Let's do it.
So what a performance, a total team effort. I actually don't want to start with LeBron because I feel like we're going to go long on LeBron.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Let's talk Avery Bradley for a second.
Whew.
Right?
Yes.
So Bradley's been a little bit maligned. You and I have both we waffled on his signing to start the year. He's been up and down this season.
Mm-hmm.
What a freaking game from Avery Bradley today. The shot making was huge. The defensive ball pressure was huge. The dude was standing in there and he was just all over the floor, just playing tough-nosed defense, just everything that you would want from one of those super competitive players. One of the things that you've said about Bradley to me, both on the pod and offline, is like, that's a dude I can trust, right? Like, mm-hmm. to come out there.
He's going to do his job.
And he's going to play hard, and he's going to be committed, right? And that's what we saw this game. And so after the game, you know, like, the LeBron narratives will start to fly, and he was fantastic. Anthony Davis, big game from him as well. But give Avery Bradley a fucking game ball. He was fantastic this game.
So, yes. For one, him doing that against the Clippers, that fan base hates his guts, and yes. he ain't too fond of them either. So him dropping 24 on them is just, mwah, just delicious, right? He's a guy, like, so there are some guys, Dwight fits this description as well. I feel like we got one more guy on the team, just, I'm two of my, Rondo actually fits this description as well, even though he fucking drives me crazy, is, like, a lot of times when role players get old, like Bill Walton used to tell this story. Walton was an MVP, led the Blazers to the 1977 championship, had a bunch of injuries to his legs that really took kind of the guy he was. And then he became a role player for the Boston Celtics. And there were games where I remember it was either Walton or McHale telling this story, but it was about Walton. And there'd be some games where, like, Walton would, like, sky for a defensive rebound or something. And McHale and other guys would be like, where the hell did that come from? Like, you don't do that normally. And he was like, I just feel good today, right? And a lot of times with guys, like, Avery Bradley is not that old, and he was a really good two-way player not that long ago. And the league, I feel like he's been more impacted by the Morey ball, three in paint type of game that the league has become, that his, like, archetype has become kind of obsolete. And then maybe that's a little strong, but he's been devalued as a result of, he's not a great catch and shoot 3-point guy. Great today for sure. And then ball pressure in non pick and roll situations, that can get, he can get kind of washed out in those situations. So the overall direction that the league has gone in has devalued him a bit, but that dude is still a good basketball player. And there's something about, and I don't even know how to articulate it fully, and this isn't the pod to do it anyway. There's something about analytics that does not capture what basketball is in that moment, in that situation. Like, they're getting there, and maybe in 10, 15 years, they will get there. But, like, a guy who is strong, like, the ability to absorb contact and the impact that has, right, on a team overall. Like, that really, really matters from the perimeter position, and we don't have much in the way of that with KCP and Caruso and Rondo. Our guards are not strong. And so the importance of being able to be physical, there are all sorts of things that he can do. But at the end of the day, bro, this was a shot-making game. You know what
yes.
I mean?
No, so when you talked about analytics and Bradley, one of the things that analytics are not fond of is that long two or that mid-range pull-up two, right? And that is sort of an integral part of Bradley's game. He is a guy mm-hmm. who will ball fake off a three and then step into a long two. And I know that, like, Daryl Morey is probably shaking his head if he's, like, watching Lakers tape. Like, what the hell is this guy doing? Because Bradley doesn't have all that advanced footwork of, oh, fly by, side escape dribble, sidestep, step back in two or three. That's just not his game, right? And so, and he mm-hmm. will come off that handoff series, and he will just shoot that 16-foot pull-up. And
can I jump in real quick about why that's important? Because, so we get those out of a lot of horn sets, right? And what happens is that is the shot. If the defense is doing their job, that's the shot that's open. It's an open shot. And yes, mid-range game, it's not exactly what you want to do as a first option, but out of those horn sets, ideally, you can get all the way to the basket for a layup, or you're going to hit the roll man coming off of that, or you're going to hit the guy on the skip pass, right? Well, what if the defense defends all that correctly?
That's right.
Am I passing up the open shot with 12 seconds left on the shot clock because it's from 16 feet, not a pull-up? That's a playoff shot. That's a basketball shot. When the defense is done, like, think of it as a chess match or a fight or something like that, or just like the whole nature of what basketball is. You think in the playoffs against the fucking Clippers or Bucks or high end team like that, the first thing you want to do is going to work? Hell no. The second thing probably ain't going to work either. They're going to take that away. That is why they're there. That's why they're there at that point in the playoffs. So the ability to hit a mid-range pull-up against a drop coverage because they're taking everything else away, those are points that are available that really KCP can hit that shot and Bradley can hit that shot. And that's it on the Lakers roster.
Yeah, and those are super important shots. Bradley hit a couple of those today against the Clippers. And The Clippers are a really good defensive team, man. Like, that first half was a slog, just like the Bucks game,
yeah.
Where it's just like, my goodness, where are the open shots going to come from? And everyone mm-hmm. looks a little bit confused about where they're supposed to be, and the spots I want to get to aren't necessarily there. They're not open. And so when an open shot presents itself, you have to pull up and have the onions to take it. And that's what impressed me about Bradley against the Clippers today is the game was not too big for him. He was right there mm-hmm. living in the moment with the rest of his teammates. And he's not as good as LeBron or Anthony Davis, but guess what? He brought the same sort of focus and determination to succeed in his role as those guys did. And he had a big night or a big day. And the Lakers simply do not win this game without Avery Bradley's performance. So I just wanted to sort of start out the pod by giving him a little bit of love because he was super important today. Let's move on, though, because...
Yes, no, I got it. I got this, baby. I got this. So you talked about the slog of that first half, right? Bro, it's the spacing. I've been convinced of this. Clippers ain't doing shit that's special defensively against us. They are packing the paint and daring us to make shots, right? The second element of that is LeBron James was getting to the bucket anyway, even though they were... But we're going to talk about that in a bit. Frank Vogel made an adjustment in the second half where JaVale McGee played 6 minutes, which isn't too different than what he normally does. But Dwight Howard did not play at all. We saw a lot of AD at the five. We saw a lot of Markieff Morris. I want to talk about that. We are finally seeing those AD at the 5 minutes. We saw that in some big matchups. And Morris having the ability to do that. And there's benefits and downsides to that, but they cannot play a conventional big many minutes against the Clippers. But as soon as they made that change for the first time this season, by the way, although in the second quarter of the Christmas Day game, watch the last like 4 minutes of that. We were hooping, man. We had AD at the five, had LeBron, KCP, Danny Green, and who's the last guy that was on the court? Kuz was the last guy on the court, right? So you got offense, spacing, even though Kuz has struggled, you've got guys, you've got a guard out there. It's not Dwight. It's not JaVale. Talk to me about what you saw in that second half of the impact of going smaller.
No, man, just the driving lanes, man. Like offensively, it was the driving lanes to me. Like,
yes.
Like LeBron, and this is true of a bunch of special offensive players, but it's especially true for LeBron, who is such a sort of like straight line drive type of player. Mm-hmm. There is not a lot of wiggle or shake to LeBron James. He explodes that first step and then he gets downhill and he is at the front of the rim. And when there are bodies there, he is going to make the pass. He is not going to try to finish over the top of 1.5 defenders. That's just not who he is anymore. And even when he was younger, he would still pass out of some of those plays because the pass is the right play when the backside is a 2-on-1 or 3-on-2. When mm-hmm. you start to play lineups with AD at the 5 and Morris at the 4, or even Morris at the 5 with like Danny Green at small forward and then LeBron sort of playing like this power forward point guard hybrid role, right? Like LeBron is not worried about the first defender, even if that first defender mm-hmm. is Kawhi Leonard, or even if that first defender is Giannis. He is...
Where's the help coming
Where is
from?
The help? Where are my options? Am I going to be able to finish once I get there? And Montrezl Harrell does not bother him, right? Like, he's just not, and neither is Marcus Morris. None of those guys are going to be like, oh, well, they're the help. So
this, if I could jump in real quick, the Clippers packing the paint is not just because of us. It's because of them. Because if LeBron James can get to the basket, who the fuck on their team is going to do shit about that? Nobody. The only guy who's got even a chance to bother him when LeBron's on a drive is Zoo. But Zoo comes with other... complications, right? Yeah. With playing him. And it means Montrezl Harrell is on the bench. It fucks them up, right? So that's why they've been so condensed in the paint. And it's been so frustrating to see those big lineups, right? With Dwight and JaVale and guys like Avery Bradley not making open shots. Bro, we still didn't shoot. I tweeted this earlier. It was like, 23.9% this weekend from three. Like, they were sub 30% against the Clippers again. This game wasn't that close. Like, they didn't blow them out, but it wasn't like they barely won down the stretch type thing, right? We ain't even hitting our shots yet, man. If we can get to the rim and we could put press, there were a couple drives in the second half where LeBron got to the rim but missed. But Kuz got to put back on one.
That's
and Markieff Morris got to put back on the other. The reason for that is they have to devote so much extra attention to LeBron. That's easy money for those dudes swooping in to clean that up.
No, and so all of that spacing and all of those drives, and also too, like, look at LeBron's free throw numbers, right? And so he shot 14 free throws against the Clippers, and against the Bucks, I think it was 15. Yes, and he's making them too. So 12 for 15 against the Bucks, 12 for 14 against the Clippers.
But it's the attempts that matter. It's the attempts that really matter.
It
right?
does, because that's indicative of him getting to the basket and sort of living in the restricted area as an offensive player. And if LeBron, we talked about this in our preview pod, right? And you and I sort of both thought that it was going to come maybe more from post-ups, right? But it wasn't. It was from drives, and a lot of it was because of these adjustments that Frank Vogel made from a lineup perspective. Like, to me, one of the big keys, not only for the Lakers' success when they went small, wasn't just because of the offense. It was because, oh, Kyle Kuzma, you're going to go straight up with Montrezl Harrell. You have to defend him. Do your job. Markieff Morris, you're going to be put on an island with Montrezl Harrell. Do your job. And guess what? Those guys held up defensively as well. And so that then allows Anthony Davis to guard Kawhi. It allows him to maybe guard Marcus Morris and be more of a helper. Like, there are so many other ways to sort of deploy Anthony Davis as sort of this heat-seeking missile defensively, where he can challenge shots. How many times did the Lakers help and show early and try to pick up charges? They had a couple of calls go against them, but they were still right there, and that gets in the Clippers' minds as well when they're attacking.
Aside from those calls that got called for blocks, you had guys altering shots by doing that. Like, Vogel said this after the game. He was like, in the second half, we were determined. Every play, every time the ball got into the paint, there was going to be a collision. And I love that, because it's that rotation out of their ball screens. It's that, I always talk about weak side tag guys. If you've watched my videos or read articles and stuff, I always talk about the weak side tag man. Lakers were being a little more aggressive on their ball screen defense, meaning that the big was coming up higher. And so in that pocket pass is available. So if you get the ball to the roll man, the Lakers are vulnerable there because everybody's being aggressive on the perimeter. That guy's slipped behind. But if the weak side tag guy is doing his job, and you mentioned this, then that's what leads to those, I'm going to pick up a charge. And there's all sorts of vets doing that. But the other guy that's doing that is Kyle Kuzma. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Kuz. Ever wonder why traditional button-ups look so long and baggy? That's because they were never meant to be worn that way. Untucked shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, their shirts are a perfect untucked length. With more than 50 fit combinations, Untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Don't just take my word for it. Try Untucked for yourself. Visit Untucked.com and use code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the U.S. That's UNTUCKIT.com and promo code BLUEWIRE, one word, for 20% off your first order. All right, so before the break, we started talking about the Lakers doing their jobs, right? Not just your LeBrons, your Anthony Davis. AD was freaking fantastic in this game, by the way. He hit superstar shots and made superstar type plays. Kyle Kuzma, man, he's been a guy we've talked a ton about this season, and it's been funny, like, the way that he's been getting better, and his contribution to the team has not been at all the area that we expected. He's been good enough for long enough on defense to where I'm like, this kid's actually like a decent wing defender. He's not a great wing defender, but he's like a decent wing defender. That's so fucking huge on this team, man. On this team that's so small that even in this game, man, we had these like Rondo, KCP, and Avery Bradley lineups that just like you're too small at the three to be able to compete yeah. against these big physical teams like the Clippers. And at least physical on the wing. And so like Kuz being able to do that, holy shit, man, it means so much. And it's so great to see him, as frustrating as he is, not be afraid of the moment, but also the like, this is how you play basketball type shit. The like tagging the guy from the weak side, not being a step late on that, getting there, getting your feet set, rotating out, talking, communicating. It ain't the way I expected it to happen, but Kuz was huge in this game.
Well, you know, and I don't want to give you a bunch of crap about this, but on our last pod, I had said, you know, like, Kuz is doing a lot of other things better, and it was still sort of, and I think you said this, and I agreed too, so I don't want to bury you here at all, but it was still sort of like, but the shooting... Like, well, he's got to make
that's
the shots.
That's what
right?
we think of Kuz, right? Is like, Kuz is a scorer. That is that's who right. he has been. Who the fuck would have thought, like, oh, this kid's actually going to be really helping us on defensive rotations? Like, but that's how it's actually been exactly. happening rather than theoretically.
But the last couple of games, you have seen, but everyone, we've all seen that he can be a positive contributor in ways that go beyond his jumper. Now, did I tweet something out that got, you know, 500 likes about Kuz missing that wide uh-huh. open corner three?
Yeah, he's frustrating his shit on those.
Like, of course I did, because that's a shot that he needs to bury, but that could have been any player in the corner, and I'm saying that yes. same thing about them. Like, if you're out there, you have to make that shot. That's not a Kyle Kuzma problem. That's everybody's problem. It's Kuz's problem as an individual because he's missed more shots than what we would have liked this year. That said, give him credit for him holding up on an island against a bunch of quality wing players and ball handlers who look at him the way that like the starving man looks at a steak on like an island. That's how offensive players have been looking at Kuz, and he's been holding up. And the thing that you and I think have both agreed on about Kuz in terms of his wing defense is like, the dude's a legit 6'8", 6'9". Mm-hmm. He is like bigger than what you think he is. And so when he keeps you squared mm-hmm. and he's taking you in the chest, right? It is sort of like, okay, well, I have to shoot over the top of this guy. And if you're a 6'5" shooting guard or a 6'6", 6'7" small forward with average length, and Kuz is standing there and sort of absorbing you because he is big enough to sort of take that shoulder to the chest a little bit when it's a same size guy and then challenge you up high, that's a difficult mm-hmm. shot yeah, to make. And he's been doing his job defensively. And then offensively, look, man, like, he's still making the right cuts. He is still going after the offensive glass. He is still doing a lot of things that are super useful to this team. And if he can do those things while Markieff Morris gets
Morris
more minutes,
Morris is so huge for this
Davis,
team. Sorry, continue. But there's like the chain reaction that Morris has caused with the second unit. Like, we're actually good with LeBron on the bench now. Like, we're not great, nor would we expect to be, but we're not a fucking disaster. And that's so big for this team.
No, the most important thing to me in both the Bucks and the Clippers games, and the reason why they won those games is I don't have the stats in front of me, but the Lakers were either neutral or positive yes. in a lot of those shifts that LeBron went to the bench. And Vogel tries to give LeBron like 4 rests a game, right? And so he pulls him out like halfway or 2/3 of the way through the first quarter. In the Clippers game, he did something interesting. He brought him back with like a minute
and
a half.
Did you see how early he subbed him in the third quarter? He came out with like 6:50 left in the third quarter. I was like, oh shit. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, but that's because he's been putting him back in before the close of that quarter, so he
right.
can
that's
wrap
true.
Around.
That makes sense. Yes. Right? So he's not coming in at the 12-minute mark in the next quarter. He's coming in with like 1:30 left in the third.
Exactly. So he's wrapping around the quarter, and then he gives him that other break again in the middle of the fourth. And so the Lakers have been winning one or both of those shifts that LeBron was out, at least they did against the Bucks and against the Clippers. And winning those minutes, or at least staying neutral, is so important considering like the tire fire that the Lakers have been most of the season with LeBron on the bench, which is like evident in his on-off numbers. So Morris just sort of helps with the distribution of shots and in sort of floor balance. And he allows the Lakers to play like a much more competent form of basketball on both ends of the floor, where they're not just relying on a Rondo AD pick and roll or an AD post up to get them something effective.
Absolutely.
Right? Because it's not just like, oh, it's Rondo and then Caruso. And then you're like, oh, well, where is the offensive shot creation going to come from? Right? Like, that's not it. It's you've got another player in Morris who is confident as a shooter, who has some in-between game. He can go after the offensive glass. He can post a little bit. And that sort of breadth in terms of scoring ability is super important for this specific Lakers team. And I think we wanted that from Kuzma. And he's shown some of that, but when you combine Kuzma and Morris, that's...
Yes, and so it's Kuzma's improvements too, right? Like, Kuzma, I think a lot of people, but just speaking for myself, the importance of Kuzma scoring was because he wasn't fucking good at anything else. So if you're gonna play defense like you did the first two seasons, go get us some fucking buckets, because like you're gonna be a negative in the other aspects. But if you're gonna defend like this and shoot, God, can he get to 33%? Like, goddamn, like just make a shot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's unreasonable to ask, but that said, it makes it less essential that he's making shots, because he's contributing in other areas. He's that garbage man, that Cedric Ceballos, like that great tweet you had today about that, right? Where he's able to clean up. And that's really important around guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis that put so much pressure on the basket. Like I was saying earlier, right? Like LeBron drives to the rack and there's at least one other dude that's coming to try to stop that. And if that second dude comes, maybe he forces the miss from LeBron. But Kuz and Morris too have great instincts on like just dive from the weak side. So Kuz's improvements in other aspects really, it would be great if he can start shooting. And that's the thing about this team that's really exciting, is they shot under 30 fucking percent from three, man. They shot under 25%, and they beat those teams by a combined 19 points, man. Like I'm gonna talk about this at the end, but this team has something from the chemistry standpoint that nobody else can access in the league, but we'll get into that later. With Kuz, man, it's great to see him contributing in this way. Let's move on to AD before we get to LeBron. What do you see from AD today, man?
No, like I was going to ask you, you stole my thunder right there, because Anthony Davis, man, like big shot maker, big shot taker too. And like a couple of different points during this game, it looked like the Lakers were going to waffle a little bit. Like the Clippers weren't coming on strong, but the tide was slowly turning. Like they were up, I think, 13 or 14 at one point, and then it got down to 7.
And you start going like, hold on. Yeah.
Yeah. The old Phil Jackson line, like sphincters are tightening.
Sphincters were like, indeed tightening in my household. Yes.
And there's AD, like mid-post catch, turn and face, jab step, 16-footer.
Bro,
money,
he hit this
right?
drop.
Little
he,
catching.
He hit this drop step, like jump hook type thingy, like where he was behind the backboard. He was on the left side of the basket and he shot it with his right hand.
Yes.
And it was just like superstars. Like Anthony Davis is a superstar. He's a little bit of a different superstar because he's so dominant defensively that he can be really, really good on offense and still be a superstar. But in big games and in big moments, superstars hit bad shots. They hit shots where you're like, the defense played great. That's a tough shot. Oh shit, it went in, right? Anthony Davis did that tonight.
No, man, 11 for 19 from the field. 11 for 19, right? He hit that. He only went 1-for-4 from three, but the three that he did hit was a huge three.
Yes.
I think it pushed them up again, either from 7-10 or from 6-9. It just gave them some really good cushion. 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, a block, you know, plus 12. Just a huge night from AD. He was really good against the Bucks as well. We've always sort of looked at AD before he came to the Lakers, and I think that it's been true this year for the Lakers too, is some of his most effective games seem like he's sort of just like, oh, well, he's a finisher, right? Like, he's not really a shot creator, or he's someone who is like spinning or catching a lob, or he's out there in the open court. But this game, I thought the shots that really mattered were the ones when LeBron was not in the game and the Lakers just sort of needed to stay afloat or make sure that the Clippers didn't gain any more ground. And there was AD sort of just hitting that silky jumper or getting to the foul line. He had a couple of plays where he was super aggressive to get into the paint. He didn't finish, but he drew a foul. Those are just super important possessions, man. And to have him as sort of your 1B is like, how lucky are Lakers fans? Like, how lucky are we to sort of, like, for all the love that LeBron gets and all of it is warranted. And all of the praise, and there's going to be a lot of pushback from people about like the MVP narrative thing starting to creep back open. I don't care. LeBron James is super valuable. He can win the award. He could not win the award. I honestly couldn't care less. He belongs in the conversation, though. But to have Anthony Davis here saying, you know what? Yeah, 30 points back-to-back nights against the Bucks and the Clippers. The Clippers were not big enough to deal with him. They were physical, and they tried
to be
physical.
This is why they packed the paint. It's not just LeBron, it's AD too. They are too big and strong athletes for that team.
The Clippers tried to set the tone early too. Marcus Morris fouled him and stood over the top of him and sort of flexed, right? But all of that stuff, AD is playing through all of that.
Bro, how big is that? Because he hasn't done that all season, man. Like, there have been times where, like, bro, I love AD. He's a great defender. He's a great overall player. I always refer to him as like a pterodactyl, right? And he, you know, he's kind of swooping in. But like, there have been times in big games where I'm like, you got to go up stronger, man. Stop falling on the ground all the time. Yeah. Like, stand tall. And this game, bro, this game for Anthony Davis was his stand tall game.
He was just so good. And the thing is he was so good without being spectacular. And so LeBron was spectacular. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end, with all of those drives and the and one finishes and everything that he was doing as sort of the maestro who was conducting everything from the top of the floor and designing every play and getting everyone in the right position so that he could do exactly what he wanted to do. LeBron was spectacular. Mm-hmm. But Anthony Davis, he was just so freaking good play to play to play. And for all the love that we give LeBron, and we went long on Avery Bradley as well, and we can talk about Kuz and Morris and even like that really good two-thirds of a shift that Rajon Rondo had. All of those things were super important. But Anthony Davis, man, dude just plays at like in between an 8.5 and a 10 pretty much every single night. And he does it on both ends of the floor. And against the Clippers, he played his size and showed that his finesse game is still something that is going to give so many people problems because he's just so big and so skilled that he was just a problem, man. He was a problem. And when Kawhi or Morris or Harrell or any of these guys tried to push him off of the block, he just stood in there, he made his catch, and then he attacked and made plays, and just good for AD, man. He was so freaking good.
He was, bro, we got in, with apologies to James Harden, who's a wonderful player, as kind of irritating as he can be, we have the best offensive player in the NBA and we have the best defensive player in the NBA. And they really, in these last two games against them, because it wasn't just the Clippers, it was the Bucks too, man. Like, bro, yeah. they went on an 18-0 run against the Bucks. It's not.
Let's talk about the Bucks game.
Because it's not just.
So let's talk about the Bucks game.
It's not just that they won these games.
They controlled the games. They controlled the games.
Talk to me. Preach it. Like, shout it from the top of the mountain, man.
No. Look, man, like the Bucks game. The Bucks game was a little bit iffy at first. The Lakers looked a little off balance.
They were so fucking tense to start that game.
And if you heard Frank Vogel talking during the game, during his little coach's interview, he mentioned it. He said, like, we looked a little bit skittish and nervous a little bit at the start of the game, and it showed. And then over the course of the final three quarters, the Lakers scored 94 points over three quarters against the number one defense in the league. I think they had a 39-point third quarter or something like that. They were so good against the Bucks, and they just controlled the tempo and the pace of the game. Like, they were the team where they said, we're the better team. And they showed it every single for the majority of both of those games. And to sit there and try to play this as anything else besides the Lakers sort of asserting themselves and positioning themselves as sort of the team that you have to beat. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not here to have to beat you. Yeah. You have to beat
us. I'm not in jail with you. You're in jail with me. Yeah.
You have to try to take away our strengths. You have to beat our defense. You have to stop LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Right. And to assert themselves in that way in these two specific games, like, it was just so great to see and watch them do. We'll do this, especially when you consider the narrative sort of surrounding this team before these two particular games. You had this great tweet earlier, and it might have been after the Bucks game, but you would sort of talked about how the Lakers have actually been really good against the top eight teams from, like, in the league the last like in the last seven or eight times that they've played these squads, but like the narrative around it was still like, oh well, can the Lakers beat the Clippers? Can the Lakers beat the Bucks? Well, goddamn right. Hell yeah. They can. They just handed both those teams their hats and did it in a way where they weren't blowouts, but they were convincing.
They controlled those games,
both of them. So talk to me about the Bucks, B, because there were a lot of things that stood out to me, but I'll piggyback off of you this time.
All right. So the defensive commitment by everybody to wall off Giannis, right? Giannis is wonderful, man. Like, I love that guy so much. His mentality. He is susceptible, however, to those. You know how I was talking earlier about how Anthony Davis made tough shots against good defense. If you can get Giannis to make tough shots against good defense, you've done your job. He's not the best player in the game at that. And those situations become more and more prevalent in the playoffs. If you have some sort of weakness, if you have made a mistake, Giannis is going to eat that up every single time. I always think of basketball in the, like, advantage versus disadvantage situations. In advantage situations, this is something the Pelicans are really good at. It's why they're bad in crunch time, is that, like, if you're scrambling or not in position, like, and there are a good deal in a regular season basketball game, a good number of situations like this in a regular basketball game where, like, somebody's made a mistake, there's an offensive rebound, people are scrambling, but, like, not everybody is in the position that they're supposed to be in. Guys like Giannis and Zion and Brandon Ingram, these phenomenal athletes, whether it's their leaping ability, their strength, their length, all of these different attributes that Giannis possesses, they will eat you up every single time when there is an advantage situation. That is where athletes thrive. Against the Bucks defensively, if you can do your job and not allow advantage situations, Chris Middleton's really good at that, and he was not good against the Lakers in that game. Chris Middleton can hit shots when advantage has not been created. the value of Giannis drops significantly in non-advantage situations. And so that stood out to me defensively. Go ahead.
Can I jump in there? Because I don't want to make it seem like we're trashing Giannis here. Because
certainly not.
First of all, so I agree with you 100%. What I would add on to that is Giannis is also so good at creating that advantage against so many teams, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, so advantage just doesn't come from anywhere. Like, so not only does he pounce on mistakes, not only does he pounce on you allowing advantage, he creates advantage. And the thing that stood out to me against the Lakers is they were good at holding up in a way where they did not allow Giannis to create as
so
much
this
advantage.
This is what I'm talking about, man, is what we're talking about right here are the highest levels of basketball. The defense was perfect. The defense did exactly what they're supposed to do. You still have to make a shot. We're talking about Kobe Bryant right now, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's what people talk about, fucking field goal percentage and true shooting percentage and all these different stats. That is the highest level of basketball. Can you score when advantage has not been created? Can you score when the defense did everything perfectly, which happens more and more frequently in higher leverage games, big games like this weekend, the playoffs, and deeper into the playoffs, into the finals and conference finals?
Yeah, because you're playing the best teams. So of course, like, the margins get thinner and thinner and thinner the deeper you go in the playoffs.
But yes, but that's also why these wins were so important this weekend, man. Is like, it's not just that we were playing the best teams. These were playoff games, man. These were, everybody was locked in. We still fucked them up. And this is the first time we've done that this season. My talent is the ability to see what's happening right now. I'm not a great scout. I can't project that far into the future. I can tell you this is what happened and can try to synthesize what that means and all that. But in this particular instance, this is what happened. The Lakers, without shooting well, controlled games against the two best teams in the NBA, which puts the Lakers amongst them for the first time this season.
That's right. No, that's right. And one of the things that stood out to me against the Bucks as well is sort of the idea of it being a personal challenge. Yes. So LeBron, and this is where, even more so than this Clippers game, I thought LeBron's effort against the Bucks was even more praiseworthy than what he did against the Clippers.
Interesting.
Like, no, look, man, AD was in foul trouble. LeBron basically said, I'm taking Giannis. So at first it was by necessity because AD wasn't even in the game. Mm. And so someone has to guard this dude. Who's it going to be? Well, it's going to be LeBron. Okay. But in the second half, they stuck with that matchup, right? And so AD was out there guarding Wes Matthews for a lot of those possessions. And LeBron, what impressed me against Giannis is, and LeBron did this against Zion too, and so I shouldn't be surprised, I guess. LeBron's just a load in terms of how he can absorb that sort of first shot, that like that first physical shot that a strong offensive player tries to put on you in order to create that separation that's going to generate that advantage. And LeBron was stonewalling Giannis at the point of attack time after time after time. And it's why he did such a good job on Giannis. And then crafty ass LeBron with his quick hands, stripping down, swiping away the ball, poking at it every time Giannis was trying to elevate, to get up a shot. He was challenging high. Like that sort of mano-a-mano competition, that game within the game, LeBron took it to another level against the Bucks, even higher than what he did against the Clippers, in my opinion, because he did it on both sides of the floor. And so all the offensive stuff that LeBron did against the Clippers, he did that same stuff against the Bucks, like standing ovation, tip of the cap, crown him, you know, all of that. But defensively against the Bucks, that was a game where for all of the AD is our defensive anchor, LeBron James was a defensive anchor against the Bucks because he basically took on the challenge of guarding the Bucks' best player and reigning MVP one-on-one, essentially. And did he get help? Yes, he got help. The guards did an excellent job of sort of like crowding him. You and I sort of talked about the bracket coverage that like LeBron sees a lot in pick and roll. Well, the Lakers deployed that same stuff against Giannis in transition and in pick and roll stuff. They started to have to use Giannis as a screener in order to try to get him the ball. Didn't matter. LeBron was there, the rest of the team was there, and they swarmed him. And to me, that was what stood out to me most about the Bucks game, is that in a defensive slugfest against the league's number one defense, who was the better defense that game?
Yeah, it was the Lakers. It was the Lakers by a solid margin, man. And the thing with LeBron that is different than any other point of his Lakers tenure, really, is he's getting by people when advantage is not created. This is, again, the highest point. These are the peaks of the mountaintops of what basketball is can the other team do everything else perfect and it don't fucking matter? And LeBron, for the first time in his Lakers tenure, when teams have been switching on LeBron since October of 2018, when he joined the Lakers. And what does he do pretty much every time? He's going to dribble to his right a little bit, look down at the ball, bring it back left, shoot that three.
Yeah.
They did that toward the end of the game. The Lakers have been really working on their clear out concepts, which means that LeBron is on one side of the court, Anthony Davis too. And all four other players are at the top of the key or on the other side of the court. So you got this whole side.
Yeah, they're fanned out. They're fanned out.
It's this very old school approach. You got the guy in the dunker spot, which he wouldn't have been in the old days, but very similar, right? Like this Lakers team is like the evolution of old school basketball rather than being completely different than old school basketball that I find really, really cool. So anyway, when he had this switch, it was in the last 3 minutes or so of the fourth quarter, and he had switched onto Marcus Morris, right? Marcus Morris was guarding LeBron. And I was like, all right, here comes that three that I was talking about.
Yes.
And he drove to the bucket left, and he's been doing this thing. So I've got this, I don't usually like, you should read my article, right? But I've got this article coming out for the Athletic on either tomorrow or the next day. We'll see when I get done with it. I'm too in my lizard brain right now to really write, but it's going to be called like LeBron James is coming for his crown. And he is incorporating. So look, I love basketball. You love basketball. There's two sides of me, right? Or there's two elements of me and all this. And like, I'm a huge Laker fan. I'm also a huge basketball fan, right? And those two sides of me can argue sometimes. Like, of course I want the Lakers to do to be the best team in the NBA, to do all this. There's also the part that like just loves basketball aside from the Lakers, where I'm like, yeah, but, and there's been no other point this season where I've been like I've always felt we have an outside shot.
Yeah.
This weekend is the first evidence of it ain't outside. It ain't outside. We are in it, man.
No, they are now either riding shotgun or fighting for the wheel, right?
That's right. Now, the Clippers and the Bucks have made their statements this season for sure, which isn't to say that there's a clear leader, right? But the Lakers have now made their statement on
They have muscled their way in. They have muscled their way in more than a theoretical, oh, well, they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. They have to be accounted for. No, they have basically shown that they are viable now in a real way against the top teams. And that's something that is super important. When you and I were sort of previewing the on our last pod, these two games over the weekend, I think one of the places that we ended up sort of settling was just go out there and win these
games.
Don't
talk about it, be about
it. Right? Like, for Well, also, too, like, for all the X's and O's, for all the strategy, for all the, like, oh, do this and close out and build a wall and yada, 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 right? Like, all of the tactical things that matter in order to get there, on a certain level, I don't care how many of those things you do or don't do. At the end, I just want them to sort of roll up like an Excel spreadsheet, right? And say, here's my total. And at the end, the scoreboard says the Lakers were the better team that day. And I wanted that really bad in at least one or two of these games. Like, I wanted 1-1. I think I would have been fine with 1-1. They went 2-0.
They needed 2-0. That's what gets you in the conversation. If you lose to the Bucks, and then, or if you win against the Bucks, but then lose to the Clippers on Sunday, like, what were we talking about this last on the last pod? This was a fucking dress rehearsal. This stretch right here is it, right? This is, and LeBron James is playing like it. Now, there are people who are LeBron fans who've been following him way longer than I have on a day-to-day basis who are like, nah, man, he got another gear. Hey, I can't wait, right? But the thing about LeBron James is 35 years old. This is not normal, man. This is not normal. He has been the number one option on a team for his entire career. There's nobody who's done that for longer. And like, think about like a Vince Carter, right? Like, Vince Carter was a number one option for a long time. Now he's a role player. LeBron James ain't no role player. He's still the number one option on the team.
No, like the most comparable guy to me is probably Kareem, right? And so Kareem played in, so this is LeBron's 17th year, right? Kareem came into to the league, but it probably wasn't until the 1987 season, right? Where Riley basically said, Magic, it's your turn now, right? Like, we're still going to go to Kareem. He's still going to shoot the sky hook. He's still going to get his 18 to 20 points a game. When the game slows down, he's still going to be a focal point. But the point of what we want to do offensively now is going to revolve around you and your skills and your ability and what you're going to do. And that was a shift. The game was no longer going to be about Kareem. It was going to be about Magic Johnson. And the other guy would probably be Michael Jordan, right? It's funny because those are probably the three players who are in the conversation for like Kareem, Michael, and LeBron as really the greatest basketball players that we've ever seen. I did not get to see Kareem's whole career. I saw all of Michael Jordan's career. I've seen all of LeBron's career. You're splitting hairs with any of these.
I don't give a shit about that stuff. Well, these guys, it's not, like, right? Appreciate that,
me,
man.
Neither. But your point is spot on about LeBron sort of like carrying the load that he is at this point in his career is just fantastic. And the thing about LeBron that is amazing to me is that he has always been well ahead of the game mentally, right? But that's only gotten better over his career. And there's probably not, in fact, there is no probably, there is not a smarter player now than
LeBron. Brad, is like, him being in the same role for 17 seasons is important. He knows exactly. And one of the things I've been impressed by has been the pacing of this season. And this is very tied to LeBron James. Like, they've just been collecting W's up to this point. They've been giving exactly the right amount of effort, which can be fucking frustrating against the, you know, the lesser teams in the NBA, right? Where they kind of like go brain dead for 12 minutes or whatever. But they're what, 49-12, 49-13, something like that. They have been collecting W's all season. And I've been sensing that LeBron has been pacing himself while collecting W's, right? Like, at the end of the day, no one gives a shit if he won by 5 or 12, right? Just move on, especially when it's December games and things like that. Seeing him ramp it up post All-Star break is like, oh, this motherfucker knows exactly what he's doing. And
no, sorry to jump in. Remember last year for all the jokes of, oh, he's going to play off LeBron.
Well, he was hurt, man. He was hurt. He was just coming back from injury.
Right. But he had sort of said, like, I'm going to engage now. And then what happened? The Lakers, you know, stumbled down the stretch and then he ended up sitting out some more games. But take last year's quotes, so he hasn't said anything like that this year, but if you take last year's quotes, apply them to what you're seeing now, because this
That's what he meant. 100%, man.
This is what he meant. And
the thing I want to talk about is how, because there have been certain athletes that have had different eras of their career, right? And like, I'm talking like the Muhammad, the Cassius Clay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
That beat Sonny Liston, I think it was, right?
Yeah.
That was a different dude than the Rumble in the Jungle, Joe Frazier and Joe Foreman type of guys. Jordan as a kid, right? And Jordan in 91, flying, like faking like he's going to dunk, switching to his left hand to make layup. That was a different dude than the one that won in 98. LeBron is more floor bound as a result of getting older. He's incorporated this like backhand layup and this like all of the, he's incorporating like little tricks into his repertoire that are less reliant upon his athleticism as he's ramped it up. And that is the, like, can you still get it done? Doesn't necessarily mean the same way that you used to get it done. And that is the brilliance of LeBron James.
No, like, look, man, like the guy who came into the league just jumping basically from the free throw line and dunking and just was a blur in transition. The sort of flying death machine guy from the Miami Heat. That guy is not the same guy anymore. There's still shades of that in his game, but he's much more now, like, look at the jump shot. Look at the post game. Look at his ability to sort of finish around the basket with touch and with skill and with craft, right? And so he's added so many of these little elements to his game that keep him among the league's elite, while maybe he's lost, you know, a quarter of a step. Now, we've said this a bunch about LeBron, is that when he was, you can lose even a half a step if you're a step or a step and a half better than anyone anyway, like from where you started, then lose a half a step. And guess what? You're still a step ahead. Mm-hmm. And LeBron has combined all of the sort of like, everything that he's been able to sort of accumulate and put in his little mental Rolodex as like this sort of supercomputer brain that he has, he now applies that to a little bit lesser version of an athlete, but that has compensated with skill for that stuff, right? And so he's been able to sort of have this prolonged peak that has just been fantastic to watch. And I don't think if there's a better example of what that looks like on the court than what he just did to the Bucks and the Clippers.
Amen, brother. Let's wrap this up. The Lakers, for the first time, man, the Lakers, I've got hope that we ain't on the outside looking in, hoping that, you know, some, you know, some not miracle, but some, you know, a few things happen and break our way. We are right in it. We are right in it, baby. And this is going to be a really fun end of the season, into the playoffs. LeBron, Anthony Davis, guys like Avery Bradley and Kuz, all the role players. This is starting to coalesce, and it's a beautiful thing. Can't wait to continue to cover it. This is going to be mostly unedited. We're going to tighten it up in a couple spots, but you're just going to hear how we're feeling after this. Just an amazing win, an amazing weekend. Thank you for listening to the Laker Film Room podcast, and we will catch you guys next time.
The Angels got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Campbell in and out. The ball is tipped, and it's saved. 3 seconds left. Here's Van Exel. This is for the win. He got it.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, an amazing performance by Kobe. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me? I know Red Auerbach is rolling over.
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
How strong was that? A triple on a fall away in the corner with a shot locked down.
Lakers by three.
Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
And the critical part was Beatrice jogging back. Didn't bounce the floor. It's a two-for-one situation.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Powell.
There's the move.
Two, one, miss it.
Bryant, yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.